right. Welcome once again to the CDOT Show podcast, or the CDOT podcast. I never remember what the heck we call this. And as you can tell, it was once called the weekly podcast, and that has kind of fallen off because, well, life, work, bit off more than I could chew and all that, but still want to bring you sporadically, even though I know sporadically is the absolute worst thing you can do with a podcast. Podcast is supposed to have a nice schedule that you go, show up every Tuesday morning waiting for it and go, hey, it's there. Trust me, I use these things a lot. It's not that I'm ignorant. It's that I'm just, I don't want to use the word lazy because I put in a lot of hours at work, but lazy. So, hey, anyway, today is my colleague Mike Dyer. And Mike, Mike does a lot of things at the Inquirer. He's been here for a while. Where Mike and I kind of have this crossover a lot is our love of baseball history. And Mike's really good at it, and you'll see it throughout the year, different places where Mike will find a story interesting. And he's always right. When you read it, you notice, hey, this is a great story, and it's kind of interesting. And among his other duties, this is like something that he actually does for fun, I think. Right, Mike?
That's right.
So, thank you for the kind words. So anyway, Mike pretty much did this whole section. It came out on Sunday, and again, if I were planning this much better, it would have been, we'd have done this week, and this would have been the preview, but go back online, cincinnati.com. You can find the Crosley Field Forever section. And Mike, let's just start. Crosley Field, you're about my same age, right? How old are you?
Born in 82, so I turned 33 this month. In May, I'm sorry, last month.
Well, I thought you were, I'm old. So you're younger than I am, so this is the point. We are both born after Crosley Field was destroyed. What is it about these kind of parks, and not just Crosley Field, but because I think I kind of feel this like when I'm in Pittsburgh and I want to know where Forbes Field was. What is it about old parks that brings it to us that, you know, I know like my dad can say like, oh, you know, this is where I'd go to Municipal Stadium in Kansas City or Old Bush. But to me, you know, he went there and he has that thing. For me, it's the ones that I never got to. And what is that? What do you think that is for us?
You know, there's a romanticism element to it. I mean, when you talk about, you know, how many parks are left, I mean, just take a look around the majors. I mean, look at, you know, Fenway, Wrigley, and Dodger Stadium. And Dodger Stadium was built in 62.
Right. I was just in Kansas City, and that's like, that's an old park now.
Exactly.
Well, and I was in Atlanta. Forget that. Exactly. I mean, that's coming down. And that opened in, what, 97 for right. baseball? And that's next year's, it's, or 2 years, it's his last year. I mean, it's on its last legs, and it's insane.
I think our generation wants to know what baseball was like back in the 50s, in the you know, 60s. You know, it harkens back to a simpler age. And, you know, we grew up with, you know, guys that allegedly took steroids. I know part of my childhood, a lot of my heroes, I can't pass that along to my two sons because, you know what, it's tainted. And, you know, I still have a sour taste in my mouth when I realized, you know, the guys that I grew up growing and collecting baseball cards and starting lineups, all that sort of thing. You know, the debate will go on, but for me, I like the simpler time of baseball. Yeah. And that's, you know, call me a purist, call me what you will. But
of course, they were all taking greenies. Some of them, no names we'll mention, were betting on baseball. I mean,
sure.
It's not black and white. Is it just easier because when we look back and everything we see is black and white?
Exactly.
it's easier.
Yeah. And I don't know. I think it's just, it tells a lot about our cities across the country too. I mean, just, you know, how they've developed, how they've transformed, you know, and Crosley's a perfect example. I mean, you know, a lot of people just took, you know, the train or the trolley or, you know, they took various means, and the parking was expanded in the 60s, and I'm by no means an expert on the ballpark. I'm not trying to be like that, but, you know, Riverfront really was a crown jewel when you talk about 1970, and asking a lot of people who went to games at Crosley, and they said, you know what, we were ready. This is Riverfront Stadium. I mean, this is
because
artificial turf.
There probably weren't a lot of people there were people who were nostalgic and sad to see it go, but when you were in there every day, you know, it's like I always talk about Wrigley. Wrigley's an nice place to visit, but you don't want to live there. I mean, it's pretty much a dump.
Gotcha.
And I say that as someone who works there, so, you know, it's different than a fan. I mean, I love going as a fan. But, like, when you're there, I'm going to ballpark 10 hours a day. When you're there 10 hours a day, Wrigley Field is a dump. Crosley Field would probably be just terrible working conditions today. It doesn't have a lot of the amenities. I mean, heck, they could maybe only have like 16 bars and if they retrofitted Crosley Field as opposed to the 732 at Great American Ballpark.
Right, right.
And
let's make no mistake about it either, Trent. I mean, toward the end of Crosley, you know, it was a pretty filthy place. Things were really kind of deteriorating. I mean, the city knew, obviously, that the future was riverfront. And so you can romanticize Crosley all you want. And, you know, the photos that we have, a lot of them are taken from the 50s and 60s because that's, hence, you know, a more glorious time of the ballpark. But
I don't see a lot of 1970, or, you know, 69
right,
photos.
Right. So, you know, it's, I think it's just kind of, it's just so unique. It's so out of the ordinary for us to think of these neighborhood ballparks. And we know Wrigley and Fenway, obviously, but there's so many others, as you've mentioned.
Right. I mean, and I think that is kind of a nice, you know, an interesting difference is when you use the word neighborhood. Because we went from neighborhood ballparks like Crosley Field, like, you know, Forbes Field in Pittsburgh, Ebbets Field, even Yankee, I guess, at some point.
Sure.
You went there, and then you had some suburban ones where, like, Kansas City is out still in the middle of nowhere. You know, the Metrodome, Olympic Stadium in Montreal, another place I went this year, speaking of dumps. And then you had the resurgence into downtown, but downtown, not like residential neighborhoods.
Right.
And was that part of the appeal of Crosley, that it was part of a neighborhood?
Right. Carolyn Rose told me that. She says, you know, I remember going to those games, and I knew everybody in the section that I'd sit with. Now, of course, it's Carolyn Rose. But
right.
The point was well taken that, you know, when we got to Riverfront, I remember taking, you know, she told me she remembers taking Pete Jr. and Fawn to Riverfront, and she was worried sick about little Pete going to the restroom, you know, on the concourse level because she didn't know where he was. He didn't come back to the from the concession stand for a very long time. She remembered one game, and, you know, it's just like he could get lost in this big stadium. And so it's just, and I tried to kind of point that out with the last fan story too with Frank O'Toole.
Yeah, that was an awesome story, by the way. I mean, and I know I keep complimenting on this, but I really do mean all this. I mean, it's not just me being, you know.
But, you know, it wasn't more of it. We think of memorabilia, and that's kind of, you know, a lot of this and a lot of the sources I talk to. And, you know, they never had that ulterior motive where I felt like, you know, they're going to put this stuff on eBay and make $1,000 after
right.
the story is written or whatever. But he truly just didn't want to leave that ballpark that night. And his daughter and his son both basically told me that. I mean, this was a guy who really, really enjoyed Crosley Field and had a personal connection. He obviously was a police officer. He knew a lot of the ball players. But to him, it was just, it took it to another level that Riverfront never could replicate.
I couldn't figure out. I looked at the picture of this, and online there's the gallery of a lot of the things that he took. I don't know which I want more. Is that Pressgate sign or the No Pepper games? Because I'm fascinated by the No Pepper phenomenon. Because I caught it at the tail end of my life. You would still see No Pepper. But I think by like 19, that's probably you never saw it again after 1986, 87. So, what would you take from the O'Toole collection? And what was in the O'Toole collection, and what do you want from it?
You know, we had a couple dugout chairs there. I don't know if they were used for the ushers or what it was, but that was kind of neat. And then just the dirt, the cup of dirt. And we're not just talking about any regular cup of dirt. I mean, he actually, you know, Frank O'Toole's son, also named Frank, kept that in these wrapped up basically trash bags. And they were twisty tied up, and he still has it.
I saw the picture, and it was, the cup, too.
Yeah.
It was the cup that somebody had probably had a beer in before, and he used it to
right.
scoop it up. You know, now, like, you know, in Sky Mall, you can get dirt from Yankee Stadium, and it just doesn't seem the same as...
It's not as official as what, you know, Mr. O'Toole took. It's just, you know, everything nowadays is, you know, numbered or, you know, limited edition or, you know.
I mean, you've been to the ballpark. You've seen these authenticators. They have these little stickers. They
right.
have a big freaking roll of stickers that are those little hologram stickers you see. And, you know, every bat that's broken, goes to the authenticator. Every ball that goes in the stands, every ball that is used gets the authenticator, and they scan it. It's computerized and all that. And then, you know, what Frank O'Toole did couldn't happen today.
No, of course not. First of all, he would have been arrested.
Right. Well, and then, like, you know, you read the stories. You had the story about the seats, and I thought that was so cool about how you track down all these seats. But, you know, Riverfront seats, you can still, Great American Parks, the seats where they just replaced them this year, you can buy those, and you'll do that. But they had trouble getting rid of them.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, you know, I found these seats at the Butler County Fairgrounds, and they were purchased for $2 each, Trent. I mean...
Well, inflation, that could have been like $15.
Well, okay, all right. But it's so funny how some of this stuff was from the King Wrecking Company. I mean, they were advertising in the newspaper, but basically, you know, they had this auction, and the researcher, Mike Weaver, as I mentioned, I mean, he went down there with basically $40 in his pocket, came away with a couple seats and the San Diego Padres pennant, which he still flies every Father's Day, you know, just out of irony. But, yeah, just a different time. And we think of 1970, I don't know, maybe some people think of that as recent, maybe some people think of that as really 45 years ago, but, I mean, to me, it's just a different time, and just excellent stories that come out of there. People who are really, really genuine that I found, and, you know, they just love this ballpark.
Right, well, because these are the people, you know, the Frank O'Toole wasn't doing it to get rich. It was because of his connection to the place, connection to the team. Whereas, you know, hey, I'm not bagging on anybody who's selling that because people are buying. I mean, it's, you know, that's how it works now. But I'm guessing he never thought, like, oh, somebody's going to pay me big bucks for this No Pepper Game sign. And I would pay big bucks for that now, I'm sure.
Right.
No, I'm guessing Frank O'Toole, the son, is, after this weekend, is getting a lot of offers about some money now.
Right. No, there's no doubt about that. And, you know, the stuff was just stored in his basement all these years. And like I said, once Mr. O'Toole passed away in 2004, it was just passed along to his son. And, you know, it wasn't mentioned in Mr. O'Toole's obituary that he was a last fan. It was just kind of this.
How did you find that story? This might be a little too inside for some people, but as a reporter, I find this fascinating.
Sure. Well, first of all, I used, you know, a lot of the content from Greg Rhodes and John Arardi's book, Crosley Field, came out in 1995, as a basis for kind of starting my research. But obviously, they mentioned that Frank O'Toole's name. I went in our archives and I looked through some stuff on newspapers.com and found that, in fact, yes, you know, he was listed in all these newspaper articles, mentioned in the Inquirer and the Post in you know, 1970. Then I looked in our archives and tried to connect the dots with his obituary, found that one of his surviving members was or is an elder assistant principal. My high school connection kind of rang true with that, and he was a former wrestling
elder
coach.
Guys. Elder. I forget that you're an elder guy.
I'm not an elder guy. I'm from Akron, actually.
That's what I thought.
No, but just the high school sports connection.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah, right, because you covered high school sports.
So that was
no, Faye is our elder guy.
Faye is your elder guy, yeah.
Is he the only elder guy on staff?
I believe so.
I know a ton of elder guys. I guess it's just because I'm around the Reds. There's a lot of elder guys around the Reds.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's you can't – yeah.
Yeah, but that's how it connected, basically, the dots, right. And then got a hold of him. And then, you know, the family was just absolutely delightful. I mean, they welcomed me in, and, you know, this was just, you know, taking me in some really insight. And in the impound lot, too. I mean, that was kind of an added bonus to my story, because I didn't realize that Mr. O'Toole was one of the watchdog officers, as it was, you know, during the impound lot days. And
You know, it's been a bigger city, but it's still a small city. And it just kind of seems like how all these things can be kind of interconnected.
Definitely. Yep. There's no doubt about it. I think in 1961 World Series, one of the New York reporters mentioned, oh, this is a nice kind of country ballpark atmosphere, you know. And so there was something, you know, talking to Johnny Bench back in March, he was saying, you know, the fans could, you know, basically touch us, reach out and grab us and stuff. And they didn't really think about the money and the autographs, the connection. He says that all that changed, obviously, when we went to Riverfront. But
well, no, so that was a time in baseball where it was changing and the money was, you know, right. You know, back then, you know, guys had work off-season jobs.
It's so unique that they changed to Riverfront right in mid-season, too, in June 24th. I just found that fascinating. that, you know, lo and behold, only weeks later, the All-Star game.
The story I keep wanting to do, and maybe you can fill me in on this and might have done something on this before. You've seen that photo of Tony Perez and Pete Rose the first day at Riverfront on the toilet, right?
Yeah, of course.
What's the story behind it? I think I've heard this.
I don't know that one. I didn't dive in because mine was purely Crosby.
Right, right.
So I could take the easy way out on that.
I kind of want to do this for our All-Star Game section. I need if I can get Pete. I know Doc's getting Pete here soon. I need to get Pete for a couple things. I want to ask about that because word is they had a bet, like, who would use the bathroom first in the new stadium.
Wow.
And so it was like the two of them got there so early just because, you know, ball players. And so it's just a, you know, those things are kind of funny to me. And that's a little tangent.
There's no doubt. I actually found this is what really surprised me and kind of saddened me in a way that I could not find a radio broadcast of that final game at Crosley.
Huh.
No, it was, you know, Joe Nuxall and Jim McIntyre in the booth. Reds Hall of Fame doesn't have it. Cooperstown doesn't have it. Check with WLW, they don't have it. Check with some other sources, too. Did find some footage of the final game. WLWT had some of the footage in it. The Museum Center actually has it. I have about 11 minutes of that. And I never did get permission from MLB to put that on our website, but it has an excellent, you know, kind of a cross-section of that final game and has a Pete Rose interview at the end of it, too, which is kind
really?
Of...
Really?
Yeah.
So you got to see it. Is that...
It's really grainy and stuff, but I mean, it's, you know, it kind of jumps around. You can kind of see them take home plate. You can see one of the individuals who I talked to, who I believe has first base, because the bases were basically off at that game.
Yeah,
and I believe it's him. I got to check to see if that kind of checks out with what he looked like in 1970. But yeah, it's some pretty interesting stuff that's out there. It's just you just have to really dig deep.
Where did this come from? I mean, this whole project.
Well, the City Gospel Mission and the Reds Hall of Fame are partnering on this memorial site, obviously.
Right.
And so they announced this back in August of last year. And so I got to thinking, I knew about Larry Lubbers and his recreation of Crosley, just on kind of vague terms. But then I just kind of wondered whatever happened to some of that stuff. I mean, he was basically quoted in the Crosley Field book saying the stuff got bulldozed when he, you know, he encountered some financial difficulty. And I just thought, there's got to be some other stories out here that,
yeah.
You know, whatever happened to the remnants of the ballpark, because I knew it was an auction, all that stuff. And one thing led to another, and it just started to spiral. And I just kind of felt like, you know, there was things where I encountered stumbling blocks and people who were deceased, and I obviously just cannot confirm.
That was 45 years ago.
But, you know, the flagpole was another interesting thing. Greg yeah. Rhodes had told me he had heard a rumor some years ago that the flagpole ended up at Dunham Recreation Complex. And actually, I actually was able to verify that with the Reds Community Fund. It's been refurbished and cut from its original height, but you go out there, one of the Reds Community Fund fields that is out there in West Price Hill, that comes from Crosley Field. So, and you know, a lot of people talk about blue ash and what's out there. Most
yeah.
of that stuff is replica. But there was always a story behind that with how they obtained some of the seeds.
Go through it.
Basically, there was a gentleman named Mark Rohr, fresh out of Xavier's master's program, who was an intern at the city of Blue Ash right around 1985. And there's a whole story about how they developed the land and everything, and they wanted a new ballpark or new playing fields, basically. There on Grooms Road in Blue Ash. And so this guy, Mark Rohr, was just an ambitious, it's all get out, and he just wanted to help basically with the mayor, Marvin Thompson, come up with a recreation of Crosley Field. It was kind of a, you know, it was 25 years, well, actually 15 years after the ballpark had closed, the final game, and he went around and basically looked for all these Crosley Field artifacts. He connected with Larry Lubbers. He bought some seats. I heard that there was some possibility that he found even some Redland Field seats in northern
yeah.
Kentucky. I never was able to confirm that. But he did purchase several hundred seats, including some from the Butler County Fairgrounds, and they were placed there at Crosley. And the ticket booth is a whole other story in and of itself, but Larry Lubbers' his mother, Florence Lubbers, actually was able to salvage that from Larry's farm. she put it in the backyard of her Fort Thomas residence. It was actually like used as a garden shed. And you know, Mark Rohr, as I mentioned, who was trying to find all the stuff from Blue Ash, he actually tracked her down, and he says he still remembers fastening it to a trailer and going about 35 or 40 miles up 75, and boy, it was quite an adventure to get some of that stuff. And it's been hit by the tornado. It's been refurbished. But that still, it says if you go out there, and the plaque will say, donated by Florence Lubbers, 1986. And that comes from Larry Lubbers' late mother.
Wow. You're from Akron. Did you grow up an Indians fan?
Yes. Yep.
I guess, I mean, is it hard to be nostalgic about Memorial or Municipal, I'm sorry.
They preserved a lot of League Park, and I still have not gotten up there since they've redone the fields.
Oh, have they done that?
Yeah. I was up there.
Where was League Park?
You're going to put me on the spot now. East Side, Lexington and 66.
So, again, it was probably more that neighborhood like we were talking definitely. About as opposed to, right. You know, the...
It wasn't down in the lakefront.
Right.
Municipal Stadium was in 32. But, you know, the Indians would play some day games there. Bob Feller obviously played their League Park.
When did League Park close? 46,
yeah. And the Cleveland Rams, I believe, the football team played there for some time. And I think the Browns maybe even had some practices there or something. You know, they kept – there's not much – it was just like the ticket booth window, and you could see some of the grandstand. I was there before they refurbished it probably in 2010. Walked around the field with my dad before we went to an Indians game there at, I still call it Jacobs Field, but Progressive Field. Just kind of neat to think, you know, there's Babe Ruth's 500th home run.
Right.
Landed in, you know, on right field, and, you know, Cy Young pitched there, and, you know, Joe DiMaggio's streak.
Right.
Was taking place there. Obviously, it was stopped at the stadium, but he hit number 56 there at League Park. So,
That's kind of the cool things. Like, I've gone where Crosley Field was, just to go where Crosley Field was, and you just feel like on the spot. Even where Riverfront is in the parking garage, I love that in the parking garage by Moorline House, and you see like, oh, here's where home plate was, you know.
Definitely.
What is it about that? I mean, it's not like I don't believe they're ghosts or anything. It's just kind of, I don't know. There's
just
almost
a visceral feeling. It
yeah,
just connects. That's what connects you. And again, it may sound corny, and you know, the Field of Dreams movie and all the other stuff. You know, that I try
right.
to connect with Larry Lubbers, but really, he was before. He was ahead of his time in so
yeah.
many ways. And so, I think you just get that sense of, you know, belonging to the baseball's past. And I think, you know, few other sports can really do that.
Of course, Larry Lubbers proves if you build it, they won't come.
That is true, too. he tried his darndest.
It proves that movie's crap.
He had a lot of knothole baseball teams there. He had, you know, a lot of community, you know,
yeah,
a carnival-type atmosphere.
But James Earl Jones told him they'd come.
Well, that's true. That's true. He didn't have corn stalks there, though.
Didn't have corn stalks, yeah.
He was a ham salesman. He was a motel owner.
Yeah, pigs don't help. Corn is much more scenic than a pigsty in right field.
That's right. You know, another little side note to this, and I may want to follow up on this. Jim McLaughlin, the late Jim McLaughlin, Reds pitcher who started the final game at Crosley, June 24th of 70 against the Giants, he was actually in the ham business with Lubbers down there in Union. And somebody pointed out to me where Jim used to live. He died in an early age, but that might be a whole other story for me. Cause,
so this thing's never ending, right?
It may never end.
That's cool, though.
There's so many. I mean, there's just so many little sidebars and little things I can
never
confirm.
Is that like? I mean, was this like a story when it started?
Larry Lubbers was my focal point. I didn't know if I can get an interview with him, and I was very fortunate to do so. His son obviously pitched for the Reds and the Cardinals, and he was instrumental in helping me a lot. But I really feel like there's so much more that's out there, and people will have, you know, it's like
we'll have Crosley Field Forever part two.
Stay tuned. I felt like everything just kind of led up to this. I've written about Wade Hoyt, wrote about when Lou Gehrig possibly was photographed with Frank Sinatra. I believe it happened, but you know, there's some out there that debate
that. Well, and just the resources we have here that I always forget about the big newspaper, you know, a newspaper that's been around 150 years, whatever. Like, when I was doing something, oh, shoot, I guess it was 2 years ago when that 42 movie came out, and getting all the newspapers from Jackie Robinson's first appearance, and
it's incredible.
And it's funny how history, history proves things that shows what's important, but it takes time for that. Like, there was not a whole lot written about it being Jackie Robinson. It was mentioned, and it was kind of, you know, it was like sixth graph, and it was throwaway, and it was just fascinating to me that's, you know, that is a turning point in American history, not baseball history, American history. And I don't mean to say, you know, to insult our place of business or whatever, but that's just kind of the lens at the time can be a little too micro. And I have trouble doing that when I cover baseball. You know, sometimes you get too micro without taking the step back. 162 games, what does one loss mean? But that day it feels huge, or, and you miss the bigger picture. So it's kind of fun. It's so neat how, what a resource there is. And it's one of the neat things about living here in this town and baseball in Cincinnati, because I grew up a Royals fan, and that goes back to 1969, you know. Sure. And sure, you know, my dad was also a Kansas City A's fan, but that only goes back to the early 60s, you know, or whatever, when it was, when the A's moved from Philadelphia to Kansas City and then on to Oakland. I don't have that connection like so many people here have, through, like, not just their parents, not just their grandparents, but even beyond that. And I guess you guys have that Cleveland, too.
I don't know. Still waiting for that championship, by the way.
Actually, when I first moved here, I worked at the Post. Frank Carini was the sports editor. He's from Boston. And he had this thick Boston accent. It was great. But him and John Lackman, who worked with us, is, you know, Frank was a big Red Sox fan, and Lackman was a Cubs fan. And, you know, I was like, you know, I made it to the Royals, and they're like picking on me. I go, hey, screw both of you guys. I've seen my team win a World Series in my lifetime. Now Frank can say that now, but John can't. So it was just kind of interesting that, you know, yeah, I had seen that. And, you know, Yeah, and then actually I've seen the Royals go to a World Series since then, which seems unbelievable to me.
For all the history, though, Trent, I mean, one thing I found fascinating was there's really nothing at that Crosley site. I mean, besides the home plate marker, which I've been told is turning the wrong direction.
Oh.
That's according to Mike Weaver, by the way. So,
how's it turned? I mean, because you could figure.
I don't know. He told
you figure you could sit there and look, and like, because so many of the pictures are home plate looking outward. Yeah, so you would think, like, it would be pretty obvious, and you're like, oh, yeah, now I'm looking in the wrong direction. Or is it just, like, it's, like, east instead of southeast?
I think it's slightly okay. off. But anyway, you know, you talk about Pittsburgh, and they have Forbes Field, and they have the wall out there still. And just for this city with so much history with baseball.
Especially on that site.
Really. Yeah, exactly. And not to save anything, per se, on that site. Yeah, it's just really kind of sad. But now, you know, we talk about the All-Star game and all the excitement and anticipation, and I think just the stars align to have this partnership with the City Gospel Mission and Reds Hall of Fame.
What are they doing there?
They're going to have they're going to be a self-guided tour. Mm-hmm. So you can go in there, and I went in there about a month ago in the lobby area. They're going to have, you know, they'll have hats and shirts and stuff for sale, but you can actually take a brochure and walk around the site, and you can see basically in that first hallway there is first base, and there's a marker for it. In their dining hall is second base. I think, you know, I didn't go to see third
Sounds
base.
Sounds like junior high.
Yeah, I think the pitcher, pitching mound, exactly. The pitching mound's in the kitchen area, and they didn't, I don't think they marked that, but there'll be a light, a replica light standard there. They'll have the foul poles, I think the left and right field foul poles, some replica seats and stuff there.
It's kind of sad, though, that the, I mean, it's very cool that they're going to have all these replica things. But it's kind of sad that, you know, and again, it's like we talked about this different time, and not to have original.
Right.
You know?
There's rumors that, you know, there's part of the foundation for the original light towers. Greg Rose has told me that. I've heard from some other people, you know, on the internet about that. I don't think Greg really believes that, or, you know, it may have been there at one time, but with this construction, it's no longer there.
But, like, even in Atlanta, you have the wall from Fulton County. Okay.
Sure.
There, of course, who knows what's going to happen when they raise, because it's right next to where Turner Field is now, and they're going to get rid of all that and do something there, and I don't know if they're going to keep it. Hopefully they do. And that was a question I've seen people in Atlanta ask. It's just, I don't know, is it selfish of us as baseball fans to want some of this stuff? Because that wall wasn't meant to stand 100 years.
Exactly. I that's not selfish at all, in my opinion. And I actually talked to Hank Aaron earlier this spring about his memories at Crosley Field, did a story about his 3,000th hit here. And, he told me he was surprised because he had the first home run at Riverfront.
Mm-hmm.
He told me he was really surprised that that was as short of a stint as it was, too. I mean, you think of Riverfront.
Now he's really surprised with Atlanta.
Yeah, exactly. So, you talk about Jackie Robinson and how the newspaper accounts were back in, 47. Are we going to be regretting, demolishing areas where, Hank Aaron hit a home run and, Joe DiMaggio had a hit 50 years from now? I mean, there's a good chance we probably will regret that if those things aren't saved.
All right. Give me your favorite ballparks, current and past.
Wow.
Top five of each. And then
I never got to see original Yankee Stadium, and I regret that.
Except it wasn't really Yankee Stadium.
Well,
the ones
okay.
We were born. Because they redid it
because
in the mid-70s.
Can I have any ballpark in history?
Well, I said top five history,
okay.
Top five now.
Top five in history. Go Ebbets Field, number one. Wow. I'd like to see the Baker Bowl.
Yeah.
Something like that. Just a little bandbox,
And then on the opposite, the Polo Grounds.
Polo Grounds.
It was so huge.
I want to see League Park.
Yeah. Well.
For obvious reasons. But, those are maybe Jerry Park.
Yeah. Oh, speaking of crazy stories, the stories of Jerry Park and where they had the pool. In the back, the municipal pool. I was in right field, and they'd hit it into the right field of the pool.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, that was former CDOT show guest Jonah Carey. His book on the on the Expos was really cool about
awesome.
A lot of the Jerry Park stuff.
Seems like there's some momentum too of
yes.
The mayor's really getting out there. The PR
yeah,
push.
He was there when I was there in April, early April, which seems like a lifetime ago, and it was 2 months ago. He was really out in front, and the crowd there was unbelievable. I mean, it was 90,000 for the 2 days, and it was just – it was electric in a crappy, crappy place. I'll say not in honor of because I didn't know about it at the time, but Frank O'Toole, I took a – this was not as cool a sign of that, but a printed sign that was Le Galerie de Presse. And so I have that from the just those two exhibition games. It was not it was just a printed paper.
How much do you want for it?
$500.
Canadian or American?
Either. I'm not picky. I mean, American would be better because it's worth more. But now, 2 months ago, I don't know the exchange rate today.
But today, I mean, again,
today,
historical
yeah.
parts. I'm a Fenway guy. I love Fenway.
I haven't been since they've redone it.
Well, I haven't either. I was last there in 2000. So.
Yeah, I was last there in 99.
Okay.
The 99 Ulster game was the last time I was there.
I love Dodger Stadium.
It's amazing. Yeah. It just, there's something about that view.
Mm.
Especially you see it on TV, and it's kind of the view you see a lot. But that press box view, it just can't be beat.
And Vin Scully. He could be there forever, please.
Yeah, seriously. Did you see his call with Johnny Gomes the other day? He did this story about Johnny Gomes as a kid being attacked by a wolf and how he survived and all this. But it's crazy. It's like one of those Vince Scully stories. But the thing to me that got me was he's telling this story and he finishes the story and it's like, story's done. And there is a single to left. And it was just you couldn't script the timing better. And it was just perfect. I mean,
Vintage Scully.
It was Vintage Scully and the guy who's 80, what is he now? 80.
Oh, yeah, he's got
to
be.
I think he's close to 90, isn't he?
Oh,
so, I mean, he's
up there. Yeah.
He's up there and he's still, that is worth the MLB.tv, just listening to the at bat and listening to Vince Scully. And, if you can't sleep at night, throw on a Dodgers, you know, 10 o'clock start game and listen to Vin Scully and just be like, oh, God.
Imagine living out there where they have all those problems with the cable companies fighting.
Yeah, you still have the radio, though.
Still have the radio. That's where it's...
And can you imagine working the deadlines at a newspaper? Oh, my God.
But I'd go back and say Crosley, too, obviously. I admitted that for all-time ballparks. But, yeah, currently.
Any new ones?
I'm a big Sky Dome guy. So I used to go to Toronto a lot with, you know, and that goes against the grain of everything that Crosley
right.
is and was. But, I was fascinated as a kid. I guess I'm still, you know, maybe I look at it differently.
I think it's the age because I remember, when it happened, it was like this amazing
stadium.
It was like, cool. This is what all the stadiums are going to look like in the future.
Right.
And then like 3 years later, there's Camden Yards.
I'm surprised they haven't talked about another stadium up there, but.
Yeah.
That's in
1989. I have the only game I've seen at Sky Dome was the International Bowl between UC and Western Michigan.
Okay.
The only game I've been at Sky Dome is a college football game.
I assume the roof was closed.
It was. It was on January 6th. That was after Mark D'Antonio left. And I think Pat Narduzzi was coaching and did Brian Kelly take over? Was that Brian's first? I don't remember how that transition happened. I was there. I just don't remember.
Big PNC Park guy.
PNC is awesome.
Yeah.
It's probably my second favorite stadium.
I'm giving you out of order here, but those are...
AT&T.
I have not been to Safeco. I have not been out west very much.
AT&T, Safeco, yeah. Very good. You know the one, again, going off type, Marlins Park. It's fantastic.
Okay.
It seems, you know, that sculpture, I absolutely adore it because it's in Miami. If it were any other place, it would be like, oh, that's the worst thing ever.
Gotcha.
But the fact that it's in Miami, and I went down there and I was convinced at the souvenir store there was going to be a snow globe with that thing because it's got to be. They don't. And then a friend went down this year, and I was like, hey. Or he was like, I told him that story. He goes, wait, they don't have it? I got to ask around. They've got to have that. Of course you've got to have that. They don't.
What do you think of Camden?
I think it's okay. It's one of those things that's like, you know, like a movie or an album that is so influential, and you're just like, it doesn't hit me, but I understand why it's important.
Sure.
That's Camden Yards to me.
Gotcha. I've not been there.
The press box is terrible, so that might sour me. Although the press box at PNC is terrible, and I still love that joint.
Gotcha.
So, yes, there are two rankings for working, and I have to kind of do the fan and the other because as a fan, I love Wrigley. You know, Wrigley's top five as a fan is working. It's number 30, and that's only because it should be number 73.
Right.
Because it's that bad working, but they, I'm not going to complain.
You talk ballparks all day. I love the MLB cathedrals.
Yeah, that's so cool. I retweet that all the time.
Yeah.
And then the Crosley. I'm going to do one last thing before we wrap up. But I loved the thing about the uniforms being different when they changed the uniforms from Was that mid-season that they changed from the polyester, from the wool to the polyester? So it coincided with, that day they got the new uniforms.
I believe so. And I'm working on a story about Bernie Stowe. So
Bernie's the best.
That I'm going to find out a little bit more. And he was the bat boy for the 53 All-Star game. So he still has the uniform that he wore there. And that's going to be on display at the Reds Hall of Fame. It's a little scoop that
nice.
I received. So that's going to be on display.
Ask him about... there's a picture of him. I think it's at the spring training complex, and it might be a Frank Robinson. I've heard him tell this story. It's like he used to take Frank Robinson would give him the keys to his car, and he'd park it or whatever. There's just the story of Frank Robinson and his car. There's a story and a picture in Goodyear, and there's something to do with Bernie there. I mean, you want to talk about stories, Bernie?
Oh yeah,
just the best. All right, well, Mike Dyer. Thank you so much. I appreciate it. This was a blast. It's on Cincinnati.com, the Crosley Field Forever. I really should have done this before so you could buy Sunday's paper, but go back and find it somewhere. It's awesome. It was I hope it was half as much fun to report as it was to read.
It was. Thank you very much for having me on.
Cool. And until next time, whenever the heck that's going to be, I really do apologize. I have some interviews I've recorded, and I need to put those up with Danny Jackson, Glenn Braggs, and Paul O'Neill from the 1990 celebration thing. I'll tell the. I actually have good stories about the Danny Jackson and the Glenn Braggs that I'll have to save for that. So this is C. Show from Cincinnati Inquirer. You can read me and Mike Dyer both at cincinnati.com. Yours is your Twitter is at Mike Dyer, right?
Correct. Yep.
That's simple. Mine's at C. Trent. You can listen to the rest of the C. Show podcast archives with all sorts of folks and on iTunes. If you're there, please rate and review us. Well, only if you're going to say something nice. If you're going to say something mean, just tweet it at me because that's how I'm used to getting it. So, or email. Oh, man, I get some nasty emails. You get some nasty emails. I mean, I don't even want to see some of yours. So, yeah. Be nice. Thanks.